Jack. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage. And I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares. Nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope so. No overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know. We getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock like I told you. I'm doing.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio here on Wednesday night. I want to thank UCY.TV for having us on. I encourage everyone to bookmark this website that you're listening to this radio show on and check back. They play alternative news radio shows every day of the week, almost all day long, so make sure you guys check back and check out some of the other cool shows on this station. I want to thank Ponder and XL for providing the music for my show. Some of my local friends, you can find them on Bandcamp, iTunes, YouTube, and all those good places. Tonight we're going to skip right through the news. We're not going to do any news tonight. Tonight we have a special show. The show tonight is all about the March Against Monsanto and how it got here, where it's at, and where we're going with it in the future. So we're going to have a couple guest callers on tonight. I have a few people lined up with some expertise in certain things that I think were really influential in making this march what it is, and also where it's going to go from here, and making sure that we have a good impact that's going to last, and you know, we can build on this momentum that we've got here. So we're going to jump right into this, how the March Against Monsanto can change the world. You know, the March Against Monsanto was just started off by a couple people, and it all started off as an idea, and we were like, what is Monsanto doing? What is this Protection Act that we heard about? We heard about the Monsanto Protection Act back in December, and everyone was like, you know, we've been following Monsanto for a while because they've got such a bad reputation for abusing human rights and just monopolizing and just corporatizing the whole food industry. We've been following them for months, literally months, years even. And it all started as an idea from our founder, Tammy, and she said, hey, we should do a march against Monsanto. And I said, hey, let's do it. And slowly but surely it started growing, and then, you know, we were putting together a campaign. We tried to stop the Monsanto Protection Act in its tracks. We found it before it even got to Congress, and we tried to stop it before it went to the House, and it still went through the House. We tried to stop it at the Senate. It still went through the Senate. It got to the presidential level, and at this point, a lot of people were starting to ask questions, and everyone was starting to get up in arms, and a lot of people still had faith in Obama. And they thought that, you know, Obama's going to veto this bill. He's not. There's no way he's going to let this thing pass. But anyway, we started building up a petition, and we sent it right to Obama, and we got 250,000 signatures on this petition. And what do you know? It still got passed into law. It still got signed. And one of the big things that we're going to talk about later is, why didn't we see any of this on the news? And how come the Monsanto Protection Act was largely unknown besides a few activists that had found it a few months beforehand and got it up and tried to get it stopped. But, you know, that's just one of the things that we're going to cover tonight. We're also going to cover some innovative new techniques for growing gardens and some new ideas as far as getting the community involved in gardening and taking their food supply back. We're going to have an independent journalist on later on to talk about the role of alternative journalism and activism. We're also going to have Emily on, from one of our main organizers for the March Against Monsanto. She's actually on the line with us now. She's going to come in a few seconds, and we're going to talk about how this whole thing got started and how people started organizing and why it was so effective and how we got to where we are. Emily, welcome to the show.
Hey, Nick. Thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for being on. So I just want to get some of the tactics out there that we used as far as organizing, as far as the spreadsheets. I talked to Anthony Gucciardi from the Natural Society, and he was really impressed with the way that we had a kind of like an open source style organizing. And he even, what he was saying is that this platform that we set up and that we used for this March Against Monsanto could be replicated for almost any cause and any event. So, what do you think was the key to the success there?
Well, to be totally honest, this was the first time that I did anything like this, and it was all kind of like I just rolled with the punches and just tried to be innovative and use the tools available to me, you know, to help out with the organizing. And I'm actually planning on writing a comprehensive, I don't know what you would call it, like a how-to guide for others to replicate what we did and use the same tools that we did. And I think the coolest part about it is that everything that we used was absolutely free. And anybody with a computer and an internet connection can use it. So you mentioned the spreadsheet, and that was probably the biggest tool that we used. We couldn't have possibly done this without it. And we actually use Google Docs. It's just like a cloud-based spreadsheet, like an Excel or something like that. And you can add as many people onto it as you want to, and they can help you edit and update the spreadsheet. You can also download it so you have backups and things like that. And then the other big tool that we used was the website, which I made completely free using Blogger. I just used a template that they had and customized it. And really the only thing that we paid money on was the website domain, but it was like $10 and you get it for a year. So it's really cheap. And then of course, you know, Facebook was our big marketing arm. And you were, you know, the social media director, so you know how all that works. So those are the three biggest tools that we used, and obviously those are available to anybody.
Yeah, definitely. I really like the way that the spreadsheets came out and the way that they got so organized with everything being alphabetically organized by the continent, by the country, by the state, and then by the city, and it made it really easy for people to kind of find their local marches and stuff. One of the things you're talking about Facebook was actually really instrumental in getting this event going. But the other thing is that Facebook does have its limitations, and I think the key to future events and things like what we're doing with the March Against Monsanto is being able to find out what the best tools are to organize with, and then use them, and then try to integrate them together. So, you know, we have the spreadsheet, the open source spreadsheet that's like cloud based, so people can edit it from all over the world. It's not like Excel where you have to email it back and forth to each other, and then you gotta hope that no one changed something that you're changing. The cool thing about the Google Docs is it's more real time. So once someone edits it, you know, it changes pretty quickly. And then the, of course, the Facebook events and the Facebook groups, have been really helpful for, I know with us, for organizing our you know, like our organizers and stuff. We have separate groups for the organizers, and it's a good way of getting information out. But, you know, we were talking about setting up a new website just strictly for activists and for organizing. And I think this March Against Monsanto shows that not only can it be done, but we could learn from each one of these events, and we could help everybody with all their events, and we could start compiling more and more activists into a place so that we can get a head start on these types of events in the future.
Absolutely. And what we're doing is scalable as well, so people can take the techniques that we've used and use them on the local level as well, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's one of the big things that we're going to try to encourage people is that, you know, this march is, you know, it's turned into something really big, but that doesn't mean that it's not all about the local level. And that's what we're encouraging people is to get all the people that you're getting in your local marches and meet them and get their contact info and start building up your email contact list. And then start continuing what this march is doing. Continue the event, continue your page, and continue the contact. Because what we want from this march, we don't just want people to go out on Saturday and just march and then go home and forget about it. What we want is this march to just be the beginning of what we hope to be the food revolution. And it's really important for people to get this local movement going, and we could tie it together with the national campaign, but the local movement is what's really important. Emily, I know you have some experience with local organizing. I saw your rally that you did on at the anti-war movement. I was wondering if you had any tips for people to help with their local organizing.
Absolutely. You can utilize digital and the analog. So stay in touch through social media like Facebook and Facebook events and things like that. But also, like you said, keep in touch, exchange contact information, and meet in person. Have regular meetings where you just sit down and collaborate and think of the next step to take. And have mixers as well, or go out for coffee. Develop friendships with these people. And, you know, because that's the building block to building a community. You know, is networking and just staying in touch with the other people in your community who are like-minded and care about the same causes. And it also keeps it fun, lighthearted, not just, you know, like you're working or it's business. So, yeah, I really like the article you wrote today. You had a lot of really good suggestions for people to stay in touch and things like that. So, find out if there are already anti-GMO organizations in your area. Chances are there are. You can get connected with them. And if there aren't, start your own. And just organize events semi-regularly to keep the momentum going. And use Facebook to promote your events and let other people know about them. And once you get the ball rolling, it'll keep rolling. And the momentum will keep building.
Yeah, I think you made a really good point there about having meetups and mixers and stuff. Cause, you know, if you start building your network of activists and then you guys come out and you come out of the house and you go meet up somewhere every so often, twice a month or whatever it is, it makes it not as big of a deal for when you guys want to go out and go make a public statement or go do a protest or go do a sit-in or whatever it is. It's just, it makes it a lot easier. You got to get into the routine of being active and, you know, getting your voice heard, and this is going to be, hopefully we can build this movement into something much broader. And one thing I pointed out in my article earlier today was that one way that I found in my area of getting my network bigger and finding more people is you find people that may be in a different they may be activists in like a different category. So maybe there's anti-war activists in your area or anti-police activists or whatever it is that you guys have in your area. You know, maybe the Vietnam Veterans for Peace or the Occupy movement or whatever it is that you have in your area, you reach out to them and you guys support each other and you guys help build up bigger networks and you guys can get, you know, more people involved and they might have a friend that is interested in what you're doing and you might have a friend that's interested in what they're doing. And I think really cross promoting and working together with other activist groups, I think is going to be a really helpful thing in the future as we move forward and try to build up, you know, a more active population.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I believe a lot in having coalitions surrounded around causes instead of political labels, because you take an issue like Monsanto and you have people from all across the political spectrum who all, you know, hold the same beliefs about this one issue, and it's, you know, the other things don't matter right now. You know, we're coming together to fight this one cause, and I think that's largely to our benefit.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're gonna have to move on, Emily. Thank you for having being on the show. I got a few more guests I have to get to, and we got a few other topics to get to. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you so much, Nick. It was fun.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, so now that we kind of got the organizing and the activism side of this thing covered, at least on the local side, and you know, there's a few things we're doing on the national level. One of the main things is getting the press to cover your story, and we're going to go into that in a little bit. But what I want to talk about now is once you're at the march on Saturday, and once you start networking, and once you start compiling up your email lists, and once you start meeting people and getting to know each other, after Saturday, you know, what can you do locally to make a change in your food supply? And we're going to go into that right now. The first thing I want to talk about, and the easiest thing that can do, ideally, is you have a place with a yard, and you could plant your own garden. That's the easiest thing you can do. Okay, we're talking about more than just telling people to eat organic and to label GMOs. That's all good, but we want to talk about real ways we can start making a change tomorrow. And growing your own garden is the best way to know what's in your food. So that's the biggest thing I want to encourage. But the thing is that a lot of people don't have a yard to grow a garden in. So the question is, well, what do you do from there? And if you want to really take control of your food supply, meaning you want to grow your own stuff, or you want to know who's the person growing your stuff, I have a couple ideas here that I want to share with you guys. Community gardens. Community gardens are really cool. There's a few different kinds, and there's some that are set up by your local cities. Another way to do it is you find a local lot that's vacant, or find a lot that someone isn't using, and you find out who owns that lot, if it's the city or if it's privately owned or whoever owns that lot, and you find out who owns it, and then you get the ball rolling on setting up a community garden. Now, I want to go into real quick on how you can go about doing that. I think the whole key is building coalitions with like-minded people, which is why this event could be the catalyst for people to start doing these kind of things. Because we're all in these marches. We're all going to be out in our local towns and local cities on the 25th. And all these people that you're going to be out there with are like-minded, and they're highly likely to go along with the idea of setting up some kind of gardening setup and some kind of community way of doing this. So what you can do, one way of doing it is you find the plot and then you put the word out and you get people that are willing to come down and help you build it and help pitch in for supplies. You get the community. You got to get a buzz going in your community. So what you need are a lot of people that are going to be going around and go to your local markets, your local farmers markets, passing out flyers and just networking like crazy. And you get people together, you get 20, 30 or more people together, and you guys just go out and you just get this lot and you just turn it into a big community garden, and then you get people to volunteer to help maintain it, and they'll be able to get free food. And that's a great way of bringing food into a poor area, is setting up a community garden where people can go down there and just pick their food and work on the garden, and you can teach kids how to do it, and I think it's a really cool experience for everybody. Now the other option is, if you don't have the time or resources or whatever to do that, there's also indoor gardening, and the indoor gardening industry is actually growing really quickly, and it's actually just growing exponentially. And what a lot of people are doing is, they're just, you know, it doesn't even have to be a big room. You can just do a closet and just grow some tomatoes, grow some lettuce, grow some vegetables, whatever you want to grow in there, or you can grow one thing, and then you can get a friend that's growing something else, and you can trade them. And you can get growing equipment for pretty cheap. You can find it at local hydroponic stores, indoor gardening stores. You get it online, but you could also get a lot of that stuff on Craigslist for really cheap, and you can get it all done for less than $200-$300. And next thing you know, you got a nice garden growing inside, all organic, and you're just getting some really good food that's going to taste a lot better and be a lot better for you than what you're getting in the grocery store. Now, a really cool thing that is actually just starting to get popular again — it was popular a long time ago, but it's coming back now — and it's what they call sharecropping. And they used to do it out in a long time ago, when there was a lot of open spaces, and people would get pieces of land from people, and they'd grow food, and you know, it's kind of like almost like a lease. But what people are doing right now is what they call urban sharecropping. So it's done on a lot smaller scale, like in the inner cities, where people don't really have as much space to — they don't have as much space to do all the gardening. They don't have a yard. But if you find a couple of different people that have yards that aren't being used, and you ask them if you could use their yard, and in exchange for using their yard, they can get some free food out of it. You'd be surprised how many people would be willing to do that. I've actually personally been doing it with a friend of mine, and we're growing a nice big garden at her place, and she's going to get all the free food she wants, and then me and my brothers that set the garden up are going to get some food, and it's just a way of working together. But it can be done on a small scale, but you can do a bunch of different yards, and you could actually get a lot of food growing. It's something that a lot of people don't really think of, but you could actually turn it into like a form of a co-op, where one person — you have one thing growing at one person's house, you have other things growing at the other person's house, and then as the stuff is getting ready to harvest, you can start trading the produce back and forth between each other, which will give you a more diverse set of vegetables and fruits for everybody to eat. And this is a really good way of getting good food into poor areas, because a lot of poor areas are like duplexes, triplexes. They have really small yards. There's not really enough space to grow a huge garden there, but you can grow a bunch of little ones, and the whole community can start doing this together, and they can start, you know, making — I was thinking that you could, like, if you get two people that live behind, like one lives in front, the other lives in back, and they have a fence between them, but they both want to have gardens in their yard, you can cut like a door through their fence, and then you could have it so that people can walk through and garden out all the stuff, and you know, take care of all the plants and stuff. And I think it's a great way to help the people that are less fortunate and don't have all the space that a lot of people have the luxury of having, you know. We're also going to go I'm going to have a guest on in a few minutes that's actually going to be talking about a really cool form of gardening. And it's been around for a long time. The Aztecs used to use a form of it back in the capital of the Aztec Empire. And what it is it's called aquaponics. And basically what it is, it's where you have fish and you have your plant food growing at the same time. So you have your live fish growing in a fish tank, and then you have your fruits and vegetables growing in the grow beds. But what you do is you use the fish to fertilize the water that the plants use for food. And the only thing you really need to add into it is basically it's just fish food. But we're going to have Sandy Eden on in a few minutes here from EdenAquaponics.com. She's out here in San Diego, and they actually teach classes on aquaponic gardening and innovative techniques. And she's going to talk about a few of the things that they teach and a few of the things that they do at their location. Let's see. We're going to have – is Sandy ready to come on yet? Okay, I don't think Sandy's on the line yet. So we're going to – I'm going to jump into something else for a second. Oh, wait, here she comes.
This is Sandy.
Hey, Sandy, it's Nick with the March Against Monsanto. You're live on our radio show. How's it going?
It's good. Doing great.
Hey, so I was just talking about aquaponics, and I wanted to bring you in so that you can go a little more into depth about what aquaponics is and the new techniques and the breakthroughs that you guys are working with.
Well, first of all, Nick, I'd like to thank you for inviting me to speak on your show about my favorite subject, which is aquaponics. And I was listening to you talking here earlier and wanted to, give a little more of an explanation of what's going on with aquaponics. So a lot of people have heard of hydroponics. It's been around for a while. Aquaculture also has been supplying our food stores with farm-raised fish. But what we're doing with aquaponics is marrying those two technologies and coming up with aquaponics. So we're using the fish effluent, which is basically a ammonia, which comes from the fish urine, and we're attracting beneficial bacteria to convert that ammonia into nitrite, and we use an additional beneficial bacteria to convert the nitrites into nitrates, and that's what the plants feed off of and cleanse the water of the toxic ammonia to the fish, so that we can cycle that water right back into the fish tanks in a closed-loop system. So the nice thing about aquaponics is it gives us a lot of benefits. We are, because we're in a closed-loop system, using 95% less water to grow our food, and when we're talking about all of the challenges we're currently having with our food supply, using 95% less water is certainly significant. But as well, we're showing a real loss of nutrients in our food due to soil depletion and long transport to our tables. So if we're growing locally with aquaponics, and as you were saying a few minutes ago, if we're growing on-site in backyards or basements, empty lots, wherever we can put an aquaponics system, we're increasing the nutritional value of our food significantly. And what that results in, Nick, is a real opportunity to tackle childhood obesity problems, overweight problems with adults, because for getting the nutritional food that we really need, our body is demanding less food from us in the long run. We're getting fed what we need instead of just more and more and more processed foods.
That makes a lot of sense. So basically what you're saying is that when you're eating food that's better, that's organic and grown on a smaller scale, it's higher in nutritional value, so you don't actually have to eat as much bulk of food. So in turn, you will see like lower trends of obesity in the population.
As well as more of a food source available to the population. If we're eating less per person, we're allowing more food out there for the rest of the people. And that's one of the real points that we try to get across when we're talking about aquaponics. If there's more food available, obviously, then we're also tackling the food supply population to the rest of the world.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one of the things that a lot of people don't know about aquaponics is that the fish that we grow in that system can actually be harvested and eaten. Can you tell us more about your experience with harvesting fish?
That's a very good point. Not only do we get this highly nutritional produce out of an aquaponics system, but we're also getting a very low-fat, high-protein source of protein by harvesting the fish from the system. So it's a totally sustainable system in that we're getting all of the food that we need in order to thrive.
That's awesome. Now, did you ever hear about that guy in Wisconsin that grew 1 million pounds of food on 3 acres of land in 1 year?
Well, I've heard of a lot of success stories throughout the country and as throughout the world. And there are a lot of people doing a lot of very cool things with growing food. I think ultimately we're going to get to the point where we're going to see that aquaponics or something very close to it is our true answer in the long run. But one of the things that the gentleman in Wisconsin was able to do is grow food in a tighter density so that he was able to grow more food in a smaller area. And that's just another one of the benefits of doing aquaponics as well. Now, we can take aquaponics in several of the methods that we can do aquaponically, and we can do those horizontal, or we can do those vertical. I believe the man in Wisconsin was doing a vertical garden, and that's very easy to do. Aquaponics lends itself very well to vertical growing. It's just another configuration of a very simple and basic concept.
Yeah, the beautiful thing about aquaponics is it's so simple and it makes so much sense. And I've been wondering why it hasn't come on, why it isn't more popular right now. The one thing I do know is that the industry is absolutely growing exponentially right now. I've got friends that I run into after not seeing for a while, and I haven't even talked to them in a while, and they're talking to me about aquaponics. What have you been seeing on the business side of it? Is there a huge demand right now? Is it growing really fast, or what's going on?
I can tell you that, Nick, in our company of Eden Aquaponics, we're getting contacts daily, and people are really catching on to the idea of aquaponics to the point where we are doing classes to do-it-yourselfers. We want people that want to grow one of these gardens in their small areas. It can be in a patio, a balcony, whatever area they have available to them. We teach classes to help them set those up, and those classes are filling at a rate that we can't hardly keep up with, which is a very nice sign that aquaponics is becoming so popular to the people that have been exposed to it, that it's just going to keep growing and growing and growing. Now, we also go out and talk to just about anybody that will listen to us about aquaponics. We go out and teach elementary grade students about aquaponics. That's the next generation that's going to be coming up, and they are going to be really in the crux of this food crisis. And if they have options to carry forth with them, that's going to be beneficial to everyone in society. We also go out and work with nonprofit groups. There are several that we're working with right now, the Green Coalition in San Jacinto Valley, the New Children's Museum down in San Diego. These are all avenues that we can get the word out. And instead of us going out and talking and seeking these outlets, and talking to these people. We have now people coming to us and saying, please come and talk to us about aquaponics. The thirst for knowledge is there.
Yeah, definitely. And it's just a really encouraging sign. I mean, I found out about aquaponics about a year ago, and it all it came from was one Facebook post that one of my friends shared, and it was about the gentleman in Wisconsin, and it was about what he was doing, and I watched his YouTube videos, and I've been obsessed with aquaponics ever since. And I'm in the process of setting up a greenhouse of my own with aquaponics system. And I'm actually going to go out to one of your classes pretty soon here so that I can get a head start on what it is I need to do. But I'm just really excited about testing it out and improving on it, because there's just so many different things you could do with it and so many different ways you could configure your growing system. And like you were talking about with the vertical gardening, you know, I think vertical, like you were saying, the future of gardening and the future of agriculture, I really think it's going to be vertical aquaponic gardening, because you can just get so much food out of a little tiny space, and you got your vegetables, you got your fruits, and you got your protein all coming from one setup that requires 95% less water and hardly any energy, hardly any electricity. And the other thing that about aquaponics, which a lot of people don't know, is that it's really low maintenance. What are some of the advantages of aquaponics when it comes to the maintenance side of gardening?
Well, we have in our own R&D system here, which has been set up for a little over 3 years, I've never pulled one single weed out of it. And that is a huge plus for gardeners that want to supply their own. And I think that also, because it is such a nice growing method, it ties in so beautifully what you're doing right now with the March Against Monsanto, because we are using totally clean seeds. In other words, they are not genetically modified at all. And we can control that because we are in a controlled environment, and it makes it very easy for us to know our food source and to regain control of our food source again. So beyond the fact that it is low maintenance, it is an absolute guarantee to you or anybody that is growing aquaponically that there are no pesticides being used, no herbicides being used, no chemicals being added. And isn't that what this is all about? Let's regain that control, stop using the GMOs, and really give ourselves the opportunity to grow in a way that is low maintenance and is also giving us the benefit of using much less water.
Definitely, Sandy. Thank you so much for being on our show, and everything you just brought up to us was awesome. I'm sure a lot of people that were listening didn't know a lot of that stuff. I didn't even know a lot of it, and I've been following aquaponics for the last year. So thanks a lot, and I look forward to seeing you in June at your next seminar that I'm going to go to, so I could get a hang of how to do this before I start mine.
Well, Nick, it was my pleasure. We look forward to seeing you here in June as well. And for anybody that is looking to find out more about aquaponics, please send them in our direction, because we love spreading the word.
Okay, definitely. Thank you.
Thank you, Nick. You have a great evening.
All right, you guys, that was Sandy Eden. Once again, her website, edenaquaponics.com. So make sure you check it out and support them. They're a local San Diego company, and especially if you live in San Diego, go check that out. We're going to move on here in our building blocks of building the new food revolution, and it's all starting right here with the March Against Monsanto. So what we've covered so far is how to organize, at least some tips on how to organize, some tips on how to network. I mean, we encourage you guys to come up with your own techniques for organizing, your own techniques for networking. This is just some stuff that we've experienced and that we know has been working. So if anything, you could start with what we're doing and build on it on your own. Everyone's got an innovative side, and you could come up with new solutions and cool things. I think the main thing is the main thing with any movement is to stay open-minded and accept everyone that's showing support, even if it's someone you may not agree with on everything. At least they agree with you on something, and that's something you guys can work on together and you could agree on, and then, you know, you could work on other disagreements later on. And that's one of the big things about the March Against Monsanto, is that, you know, we are a inclusive movement. We are not turning away anybody. We want everyone's support. We've got conservatives that support us, liberals. We've got libertarians, anarchists. We've got all these different groups of people, constitutionalists, that are tired of what's happening with the food supply, and they want to take their food back. And we're accepting everybody with open arms. Okay, and a lot of the people when we first started out, there were some people that were there before us and stuff, and they were like, hey, you know, you guys might not want to associate with this group because it might, you know, not be great for the movement. But we told them, we're not going to turn away anybody that's going to be in our movement, because we want this, because the food supply affects everybody, and everybody has a right to know, to take control of their food and know what they're eating. So that's just one of the things I wanted to get out there real quick before we move on to this next section, which is the main, I think is the main thing, at least from where I'm coming from. We're going to start talking about the role of journalism, the role of media in activism, and not just activism, but in the general state of things. And why is the world so messed up that the media actually has a big role in why things are the way they are? Now, if you look back at the Monsanto Protection Act, when did you find out about it? Was it the day that it passed, 2 days later? Well, I know a lot of the people that I know and the people that I work with, because I do a lot of, what I do is I have a website called theantimedia.org, and what we do is we promote and we support alternative journalists, independent journalists, people that are writing from their desks in their apartments, that don't have an agenda, that aren't being paid by somebody to write. They just write because they want to write and they want to help people. Now, we found out about the Monsanto Protection Act all the way back in December, and we put together huge, huge movements and action to get these things stopped. But we weren't helped. We weren't helped by anybody in the media. Not one mainstream media outlet covered the Monsanto Protection Act. And people just start getting mad after the fact that it's passed and saying, how could this happen? What the hell is the government doing? Obama wouldn't sign that. The Congress wouldn't pass that through. They care about us. They don't care about Monsanto. Well, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been so if maybe the likes of Fox News and MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, if they would have actually covered the Monsanto Protection Act like they're supposed to, then maybe this stuff wouldn't have been passed. And that's the point that I'm trying to make here. Monsanto isn't the only company that is embedded in the government. And the media is one of the most powerful entities in the world, and I guarantee you that they're in bed with the government. Possibly even worse than Monsanto. And Monsanto is also in bed with these media companies. Now, I'm going to bring my next guest on in a few minutes, maybe like 5 minutes from now. His name is Mikhail Thalin. I'm going to bring him on. He's a journalist, and his stuff is read really widely. But one thing I want to talk about is the whole history of you guys aren't going to believe this, but the history of media. And this, I'm not going to go way back, but I'm going to go back to 2003 here. There was a local Fox News affiliate down in Florida, and they had these two reporters, and they went out and they did a story. And they did a story on the bovine growth hormone, which is, it's a hormone that they give to cows to produce more milk. Now, the bovine growth hormone is made by Monsanto, in case you didn't know. And these reporters went out and they did an investigative report, and they actually looked at the facts and they said, oh wow, this growth hormone could potentially have some drastic health effects that could cause cancer, tumors, infections, and cause, because what happens is when you give these cows this growth hormone, not only are they producing milk in an unnatural way, but it also increases their risk of getting infections in their udders. So then, in turn, they got to pump these same cows full of antibiotics, and then these antibiotics end up building resistant antibiotic-resistant bugs, which then leads to more extreme cases of infection in humans and in cows. So this whole case, this whole report came back to Fox News, and these reporters brought the story in, and they brought it to their editor. Their editor looked through it and they sent it back and he said, look, you guys can't report on this bovine growth hormone. There's never been an explanation why, but I mean, we can only guess that somewhere behind the scenes, Fox and Monsanto have some kind of deal going on. But I can tell you this, Fox was adamant about protecting this Monsanto information. They did not want this getting out about the bovine growth hormone and the effects it was going to have on people and animal health. Now, these journalists, you have to respect them. They weren't going to take no for an answer. They kept pressing, and they said, no, we're going to post this story. We're going to show it. And finally, what happened is Fox News actually fired these people because they refused to let the story go. Now, that was back in 97. These people took Fox News to court. And after proceedings and appeals and other things, it was finally ruled in 2003 that Fox News was in the right. And that ruling also set the precedent that the media was legally allowed to lie to people knowingly. Because the media isn't actually considered, I mean, not the media, the news isn't actually considered news, it's actually considered entertainment. So, all this stuff that people are seeing on TV and you know, you turn on CNN, you watch Piers Morgan, and you turn on MSNBC, and you see what they're saying on these TV shows, and most people take it as fact. Now, maybe a lot of it is, but at the same time, you have to understand that they legally have the right to not only lie, but they can pick and choose what they report on. So, if Monsanto told these companies, hey, don't report on the Monsanto Protection Act, all they have to say, okay, we won't report on it. And even if it came to light later on that this deal was happening, there is still no legal action that can be taken. So I want to talk about why people should be supporting alternative media. And for this, I'm going to bring in Mikhail Thalen. He's going to call in a few seconds here. Hey, Mikhail.
What's up, man?
Hey, it's Nick with the Anti-Media Radio and the March Against Monsanto. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good. Can you talk about real quick who you've written for and what you do and what you guys are working on right now?
Yeah, I just started writing for secretsofthefed.com. I'm helping them grow that website up. Before, I worked at Examiner, where I was regularly the number one political writer. I've had articles featured on Infowars.com, National News, Occupy Wall Street, the anti-media, of course.
All right, Mikhail, I want you to talk to people about the importance of supporting alternative media.
Well, the most important part is that most of the independent media out there, you can trust more, obviously, than the corporate news, and that's why the mainstream corporate media is dying, and our media is flourishing because we don't have any agenda, and we just care about getting good information out and fixing the problems that we have, and that's one of the reasons people should support, because, you know, we're all in this together, and people need to realize that.
Well, one thing I want to point out is that, like, over 75% of the independent and alternative journalists out there don't even get paid. So it's not a matter of these people writing just because they want to make money or just because it's their job to do it. But a lot of these people, not only are they journalists, but they're also activists in a way. They're like activists in the media, more or less. Am I correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think most people who do this, like you and me, we don't do it for money. You know, I went a long time without making anything, and I didn't really care because, you know, this is what I love to do. And, you know, some people are good at some things. I like writing. Other people are really involved with, you know, social media. You're, you know, as I say, you're the meme master over there at Anti-Media. So there's a lot of different things people can do to get involved, but yeah.
So, what do you think is the best thing that we can do to get more people to start to embrace the alternative media? And I think one of the main things is that people still cling on to these mainstream TV stations as if it's real news. But like I was just saying, there's no legal basis there for these news stations to tell the truth. So what is it that we can do to start getting more and more people on board with the alternative media?
Well, I think regardless, I think the alternative media is going to continue to grow because there's a lot of distrust growing with the mainstream media. People are really starting to see that things are out of control. And with the internet, of course, more and more people are doing their own research. And that's where the alternative media comes in a lot of the time because, you know, people are seeing things on the news and they question it. And then they come and they find, you know, sites like yours and find a lot better information. So I think the best thing we can do to grow it is people just need to research. Don't be out there just repeating what everyone else says. You know, do your research, find good information, and post things that people care about that brings a lot of people in, like, you know, things like this Monsanto thing.
Yeah, definitely. So now one thing that interests me about the Monsanto Protection Act is that it's what we've been seeing in the mainstream is basically a blackout of the Monsanto Protection Act, and literally not one mainstream news source covered it until after the fact. And then one of the first guys to cover it was Jon Stewart. So it's like you got a comedian talking more sense than what these guys are supposed to be doing in the news. And it seems to me like all the news does is it just keeps up this divisive tone within the country, and it keeps people, you know, kind of in their own little corners and keeps them scared to go out and meet their neighbors and things like that. And why is it that you think it is? Why is it that the media has a blackout on Monsanto? And do you think Monsanto has connections to the media?
Oh, I guarantee they do. We know the media is funded by a lot of different things. Big Pharma has a big take in it as well. So, you know, we saw this with the NDAA also. There was really nothing in the media about it, and then it passed, and then the media, you know, now covers it after. So, like you said, that's a great thing where the alternative media comes in, because now we're able to take hold of the conversation and make issues as important as they should be before these, you know, bills come forward. And it looks like, you know, we may even, just small chance we may repeal that Monsanto Protection Act or take out that part of that bill because of such the outcry there's been behind it.
Yeah, definitely. I saw an article today that there's starting to build some momentum. I think they said there was like over 30 senators now that are signed on board to repeal the Monsanto Protection Act. But the thing is that we found out about the Monsanto Protection Act back in December. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons I brought you on is because when I see your writing, you always do the research and you find out about these bills that are coming in to get voted on that are these bad, terrible bills, like things that are going to let drones fly over the country and spy on people. And I've noticed that you're really good at finding these articles and these bills before they come into play, and so that we can try to put together some kind of activism campaign to try to stop these bills before they go into law, unlike the mainstream where they're completely silent on this stuff, like the National Defense Authorization Act, which basically would allow for the government to detain a citizen without trial indefinitely. The mainstream media didn't cover that at all until after it was signed into law. It was passed through the House, it was passed through the Senate, signed by the president. And then all of a sudden, oh my gosh, there's a National Defense Authorization Act. Okay, but where were these people before it was passed? Now, if there's any journalists out there, journalists or anyone that's thinking about becoming a journalist, can you give them some tips on how it is that you go about researching and finding this information before it passes, before it gets into the, before it gets signed into law?
Yeah, man, it's really hard work. I probably spend minimally 10 hours, usually 15 hours a day, every day, researching, reading. one of the things I like to do, at least to find interesting stories, is go, you know, go pay attention to the local small newspapers. You know, I follow small newspapers in, I don't know how many, I mean, 100 newspapers out of different states. You know, that's where you find the big stories before they go big. Also, you know, government websites. You can find your state's website and keep an eye on legislation. I've done that, too. Reach out to your senators or your congressmen or your representatives. I've done that, and, you know, they'll give me a heads up on a bill and say, hey, we got this bad bill coming. We need you to really, I think you've helped me with that before, Nick, also, giving some attention to some legislation before it gets voted on so we can get opposition to it. So the thing really is just, you know, being dedicated. You know, my thing with my journalism is I try not to report on stuff everyone else's and try to have original content. So you've really got to dig and search for the content out there.
Yeah, I think that's like, I think that's really the biggest thing with alternative media is our ability to find this stuff before it hurts us. Because I'm not going to sit here and say the mainstream is purposely making a cover, but that's what it seems like they're doing, is they purposely report on things that are just, that just don't matter, and they make this huge thing out of the fighting in Washington about the Republicans and Democrats. Meanwhile, the real things that actually matter, like the National Defense Authorization Act, like the Monsanto Protection Act, like SOPA and like CISPA and things like that, they don't talk about that stuff. They just put up this theater of this huge, this political stuff that on things that aren't even going to affect us. But the things that really hurt us are the ones that they sneak under the radar and they go right through. And I think that's the biggest role that the best role that we can play with the alternative media is getting that stuff uncovered before it gets into law.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things is writing about issues that everyone agrees on, whether you're liberal, conservative, Democrat, whatever, you know, libertarian, anarchist. That's, you notice a lot of the issues that they hide are the issues that everyone would agree on. They only, you know, have you upset about the issues that, you know, Republicans like or Democrats like. The reason they hide these things like the Monsanto Protection Act and NDAA is because these are things that bring people together to go against the system when they push this garbage. So, yeah, that's especially why I really love this March Against Monsanto and stuff like that, because it brings people together, all walks of life, to get together for a common cause.
Yeah, definitely. You just made a great point there. They really don't. They don't report on the stuff that everybody can actually agree on, because then what happens is the establishment becomes threatened, and that's the last thing people want to see, because almost all of these huge corporations are beneficiaries of what people call corporate welfare, where they get subsidies, they get special tax breaks, they get special incentives, they get special treatment just because they're so big and they have such good lobbyists and such a huge presence in Washington, that they just want the people bickering over little things, and they don't want to show the things that everyone's going to unite on and start to get excited about, because then the whole establishment comes in under threat. And then at that point, all these companies are going to be threatened because they're all so connected in with the government. And if we start to question these bills that are being passed by the government, and we start looking at it as a whole rather than bickering between, you know, one party or another or one ideology over another, that's when we're really going to start making real change. And it's going to help the people like you and me, but it's not going to help the people like Monsanto and the people like Fox News, you know. And I think you made a huge point there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've noticed that the crazier things get in this country and just all over the world, really, the more people are coming together, which is kind of it's a double-edged sword. It's bad that things are getting more out of control, but also I've seen people that normally wouldn't come together at a more greater pace come together, so that's always good.
All right, Mikhail, we got to go. That's the end of the show. We'll see you guys Saturday at the March Against Monsanto. I told you I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing, but call it a reality because there's no illusion. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.